Welcome to the Beyond Sunday at WMPC podcast. For this Lenten season, we invite you to join us as we explore Lent for the Lost, Longing to be Found. In this seven-week series leading up to Easter, we will look at the lectionary passages from the book of Luke. In preparation for the seventh Sunday in Lent, we hope you'll listen as Pastor Christopher Edmonston and Acting Director of Family Ministry, Genevieve Brooks, explore Luke 24, 1 through 12.
Hello, I'm Christopher Edmonston, pastor here at White Memorial Presbyterian Church, and here we are on our Beyond Sunday podcast, and this is the last and final one in our Lenten / Easter 2025 series, which is about Lent for the Lost, Longing to be Found. I'm joined today by Genevieve Brooks, who's our Director of Family Ministries.
Hey there.
And she and I are going to talk through the Easter story as it comes to us through Luke 24. But before we get there, and before we start the text, just sort of a little plug. Can we do a plug?
Yeah, let's do it.
A plug. So pay special attention to the newsletter and to your online resources and to the website this month, because there's a lot of extra things going on around the Easter season.
Yep.
Like there's an Easter egg hunt. There's all sorts of special services during Holy Week, which might add to your Easter sort of ritual and to the spiritual depth and joy you have with us during Holy Week and this Easter season. And in addition to that, we want to hear your ideas. We really enjoyed doing these podcasts.
It's been great.
We think they have a positive impact on the spiritual health of our congregation.
Absolutely.
And probably even beyond our congregation, as our members and friends maybe share them with folks from other parts of the state or the country. And we think that that's really important, that we continue to have an ongoing presence where we are putting out good, honest, true, factful, theological, biblical content for people that want to come here and learn with us, for them to do that. And we found these podcasts to be a really special way and rewarding way to do that. And so if you've got ideas about things that you want to hear about, like a certain book of the Bible, topical things, like last summer we did a different topic each and every week, but like one big topical thing, like what does the Bible, what do we believe about sin and salvation? Anything like that, let us know. We would love to, any church staff member, take your idea down and put it into the hopper. We discuss upcoming podcasts on our church staff and really our Christian faith and formation, our Christian education and Christian formation folks really work on this hard and are thinking about it all the time.
Yeah, so if you're listening to other podcasts and you're like, oh, I wish my church would talk about this, send us your ideas. We'd love to have them, and we'll pass them where they need to go so that we can get some more great content out there.
Yeah. So thanks for that. Those two little promotional plugs. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
So it's Easter, Genevieve.
It's Easter.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's here.
I mean, it seems like Lent began only yesterday.
Yeah.
And here we are at the end. So by the time we get from Palm Sunday to Easter, right, Jesus is going to be arrested. He's going to have all these things happen in Jerusalem. It's a very busy week. A third of the gospel takes place of the last week.
Wow.
During the last week of Jesus's life. As though that one week is so important that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all say to us, really pay attention to this one week. Like time actually slows down for the first time. We've got the Last Supper.
Yep.
/ Maundy Thursday. Which is, you know, Thursday into Friday.
Yeah.
Then we've got Good Friday, crucifixion of Jesus, and some monumental things happen when that occurs. We'll read from Luke today, but according to Matthew, like there's an earthquake and the temple curtain gets torn in two. It like rips apart from top to bottom. And then Jesus is taken away. A man named Joseph of Arimathea, that's hard to say for some reason, secures his body, and he's buried in a tomb not too far away from where he was crucified. And then when the women, which we're going to read about here in 1 second, come back on what's called the first day of the week. That's what Luke says. And the first day of their week was Sunday.
Yeah.
Because Sabbath was the last day, right, of the week. And that's Saturday, right? That's day seven. And so the first day of the week, come Sunday morning, these women come out back to that same tomb that had been secured by this learned man, Joseph of Arimathea, that Jesus could, you know, have a safe place to be buried.
Yeah.
And that's really where Easter begins. And if you will, Easter shines its light or casts its shadow, or casts its shadow and shines its light, but upon everything else that has come before.
Everything else,
and then we as Christian folks, I know we'll talk about this, we read sort of everything into Easter, and we read everything out of it all at the same time.
Yeah. So,
how about I read the text and we'll talk through some things?
Sounds great.
Okay, so this is Luke 24. We'll start at verse 1 and we're going to end at verse 12. Here's what Luke has to say. It says, "But on the first day of the week at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, 'Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified and on the third day rise again?' Then they remembered his words. And returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves. Then he went home, amazed at what had happened."
Wow. What a story.
It's really incredible. And it's got different details and nuances in Matthew, Mark, and John, but the essentials are the same in all three. That's the main thing. Anything jump out at you, like, right off the bat, first thing?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is... the why do you look for the living among the dead? This interaction between the women and the two men, right?
Two angels.
Like, I mean, in dazzling clothes stood beside them.
Most people think of this as angelic.
Angelic, yes. I mean,
it's just not like, you know, Ed and Sam.
Right. But, you know, like, Ben and Jerry,
exactly.
Yeah. So they're asking, number one, they're asking a question of the women. So they're not berating them like it's a question. I think that's really interesting.
I mean, it's a rhetorical question. Like, do you really need another cookie?
Yeah, right. I mean,
it answers itself. Why do you look for the living among the dead?
Yeah, he is not here, but is risen. Remember how he told you that he was still in Galilee.
This is what he planned.
Right. He told you.
And in the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it's three times. Mm. It's called the three-time prediction, or the three times foreshadowed crucifixion and death of Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? The Son of Man, I'm going to Jerusalem, they're going to arrest me, mm-hmm. they're going to kill me, and I'm coming back.
Yeah.
And he tells them this three times.
Three times.
Which is really the basis of the rhetorical question. Mm-hmm. It's not that, you know... I mean, they're going there. Why? Because in the ancient world, in the heat, bodies decompose very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And there were ways of anointing them to where it was a much more decent, sort of loving process. Mm-hmm. They didn't just throw people away.
Yeah.
These tombs had these giant, if you will, rounded stones, or big enough stones to where it took people with sticks to move them. So think the size of a kitchen table for a really big tomb with many bodies in it. Or think something maybe the size of... you know, sort of two dinner plates, you know, that would roll back and forth. It was just sort of one body that was slid into the little tomb there. Mm-hmm. But the stone was so heavy that it would, you know, it couldn't grave rob easily.
Yeah.
Was the idea. Or like an animal couldn't get inside easily. Mm-hmm. That was the idea of having a stone. And so in some of the synoptics, you know, I think it's Matthew or Mark, the women actually say, so who's going to roll the stone away for us? Like, they've got this problem. It's this really fancy tomb. So that gives you an idea that something remarkable has happened. So why do you look for the living among the dead? He's not here. He's risen, just like he told you he would.
Just like he said.
Do you think it matters if it's three women? I mean, there are many books written about that, but what's going on there? Obviously, the women are doing their cultural duty. Like, even now in the world, there are certain roles that are assigned to moms or dads. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that some of them. Maybe that'll be a good future podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
Even now, though, or to men and to women. But, you know, the anointing of the bodies and all seems to be, by everything mm-hmm. I've ever read, gendered work that was given to women. So mm-hmm. of course it would be women.
Yeah.
Does it make a difference beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, they're named. Their names are in here. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary Mother of James. So it's not even just like three random women. It's these specific women. Verse 10.
It's 10. It's in verse 10. Do you know who Mary the Mother of James is?
Trick question. Is it Mary the Mother of Jesus?
Probably.
Ooh.
Probably.
Okay.
We think that, you know, and this can be debated. There's so many different theologies about Mary around the world. Yeah. And there are people that really, really get into it and really mm-hmm. believe it. Like, we have brothers and sisters across the globe that pray the rosary, which is a prayer right. to Mary mm-hmm. every day, right?
Every day.
And that's a faithful way of being, I think.
Yeah.
That's nothing that I'm going to do as a Presbyterian,
mm-hmm.
nor would that be something that I would do. I think even if I wasn't a Presbyterian, I've got a little different way of reading it. But I think Mary is really important, but it can be controversial because there are sects of people in the world that believe in what's called the perpetual virginity of Mary.
Oh.
And, you know, just practically speaking, even if she was a young woman,
mm-hmm.
And Jesus was her firstborn, the idea that she and her husband would never have a family beyond that, that's not practical.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way families were back then.
Yeah.
That's not the way children were born back then.
Yeah.
And there are different places in Scripture, even in the book of James, where it sort of alludes to the fact that this is someone writing as though they were Jesus's brother.
Yeah.
And so tradition and sort of history, to some extent, and even sort of more like legend, says that Jesus had a brother named James. So Luke could be referring to Mary, his mother, right here.
Mm, wow. Okay, also going back to verse 1, so the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb. So they're probably up before the sun.
Way before the sun.
It's dark outside as they're heading to do this duty.
Correct.
And it's in the darkness that they show up.
Always.
And everything is different than what they anticipate.
Everything. And you get this movement, right, from darkness to light, which isn't
yeah.
that different what we talk about with Christmas. But it's somehow or another a bigger light even than Christmas.
Yeah.
Like if Christmas is a really powerful flashlight, then Easter mm-hmm. is like a spotlight.
Ooh.
It's even more powerful.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's this huge thing that we've moved from the darkness of death
mm-hmm.
to the light, to the hope. Bright light, to the dazzling clothes, the hope
yeah.
of resurrection.
Yeah. It also feels like a moment of, in deep grief, in the darkness, these women still doing the dutiful thing. They're doing what is the thing that they know to be right, even though they are probably devastated.
I mean, you can't imagine, because if it's Mary Magdalene,
yeah.
who had been with Jesus since the start, I would need to do more research. I think I knew who Joanna was at mm-hmm. one time, but I did a little more research on that before I preached about Joanna. And then probably or possibly his mom.
Yeah.
Just devastating.
Yeah.
Devastating. That walk in the dark, listening to the spice jars clank in your bag, mm-hmm. you know, rocky ground, you can mm-hmm. barely see. I mean, there's a reason why they really liked these ancient people, full moons. There's a reason why they paid such
Ooh,
attention
yeah.
to the cycle of the moon, because when there was a new moon, when it was dark, you couldn't see those
Anything,
nights.
Yeah.
Right. No matter what time of the year it was, or mm-hmm. if it was cloudy, you were sunk at night. You
yeah.
just couldn't see anything. That's one of the biggest differences between our lives
mm-hmm.
and theirs, really, is what we can do at night. Like, they always got a lot of sleep because
yeah.
there was nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Whereas we, I mean, what time is the national championship basketball game starting tonight? Not even till like 10 o'clock
yeah.
because of electricity. And so, of course, they're up early.
Yeah.
And of course, they're grieving.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen everything that they thought they were standing for taken away on Friday.
Yeah.
And wham.
And wham.
Why do you look for the living among the dead?
Yeah. The stones rolled away.
Yep. And then
yeah.
this great rhetorical question.
Why do you look for the living among the dead?
And so maybe the preaching and all that is something. Why do we consider to seek out dead ends or places that give us no life when there's so much life all around us?
Yeah.
Why do human beings continue to trip over ourselves to find, you know, bad news, even when it's in the midst of good news? Why do we dwell upon the negative mm-hmm. so efficiently?
Yeah.
instead of the abundance that God's grace is providing? Do mm-hmm. Are we more afraid of death than we are more joyful and anticipatory about what God's new life beyond that will look like?
Yeah. What are the old things? What are the old things that used to work but are spiritually lifeless now? Yeah.
And what will God breathe life into? And again, what are the things you'll have to leave behind? And what are the things that God will breathe new life into?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of spiritual discernment work that goes into that as to how you take this story. Like, we're never going back to that tomb, you and me.
Mm-hmm.
We're never, actually going to find it. I mean, if you go to Jerusalem someday, they'll show you where they think it is.
Oh.
And from what I can tell, it might be it might not. Like, they're within a few hundred yards. I mean, it's the right part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things work historically and archaeologically, but like, nobody actually knows.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of things. But since we can't go back to that exact space, then how do we find ourselves or put ourselves in the midst of this story?
Yeah.
Because if we can't, then it's just words on a page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's always it. And like I wrote in my April newsletter, like I said in my sermon to some extent that I preached just yesterday, like, it was about Lazarus and coming back from the grave, right? And all of us are Lazarus in the sense that in our moment of death, we are completely lost, and we have to be found by Jesus and God. And that is our only hope. We're just like Lazarus.
Yeah.
Or we're like his sister, Mary and Martha, who are desperate for him not to suffer.
Yeah.
And we're sitting by that person whose life seems to be hanging in the balance, and we are praying our guts out and hoping and hoping and hoping. Well, again, in that moment, what's stronger, our fear of the end or our trust in the new beginning?
Yeah.
And that's really the question at its essence of Christian faith.
Yeah.
Because everything else, why we serve our neighbors, why we pray for peace, why we long for justice for all God's people in the world.
Yeah.
It all grows out from this. Had this not happened, Jesus would be just a really great teacher who had a lot of really great parables.
Mm-hmm.
But because this happens, it changes everything.
Yeah, this is the moment. This is what it's all about.
This is it. I mean, everything's read into it and out from it. It changes
Everything
is read into it and then read out from it.
And then read out from it. I like that line.
You go in and then you come out like a tide.
Yeah.
And Easter is the coast. It's what grounds us. It's what shows us where we belong.
Yeah. Mm. Ooh, that's a good word.
Really, really important.
Yeah. I also think about the grief, and again, these angels telling these women, remember what he said, that in the shock of, wait, the stone is rolled away, and then two angels in dazzling clothes, that they're terrified.
Yeah.
They go down and they put their faces on the ground. They're bowing down. And then they're saying, remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee, that he must be handed over to sinners and be crucified, and on the third day will rise again.
I mean, it's that, you know, famous author once said that I would hate to have an experience, a real experience of the divine, because I think my heart would stop in my chest and I just would die.
Yeah.
And that's basically almost what happens here for Mary, Magdalene, Joanna, and the other Mary. Like, they are terrified. They stop functioning for a few moments.
Yeah.
They're afraid now for their own lives.
They go right into lizard brain.
They do. Like, self-defense.
Terror. Yeah.
Self-defense. But again, they're not chewed out for that.
No,
right? Angels, angelic figures, the men who are dazzling in white start this conversation. And they tell him, you're supposed to remember this is exactly what he told you was going to happen. And then at verse 8, when it's retold them, then Luke says, that's when they remembered the words.
Right.
That's when they remembered the words. They didn't remember the words grieving in the dark with the spice jars clanging in their pockets or their bags. But they remembered when the angels reminded them.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to be reminded a lot.
Yeah. And maybe that's part of our call as followers of Jesus is rehearsing the truth, telling the story again and again and again, so that those around us can remember, because we just forget. We're humans. We just forget.
We do. And I think we'd like to think we can learn it or believe it or trust it like after one sitting.
Yeah.
But you can't. It's like making your grandma's biscuit recipe.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to make it like she did, you do it a few thousand times. And then
maybe
you begin to approximate what she did or how she did it. And everything is like that.
Yeah.
Like deep spiritual understanding doesn't happen because you took an online course once upon a time. It happens because you put in the time and the devotion and the prayer and you know, the listening, the deep listening and the deep study of texts like these.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just one Easter. Like one Easter is technically enough. It was.
Yeah.
But it's also never enough.
Right.
You have to keep going back.
Yeah.
I think over and over again.
Yeah. What do you make of Peter taking off and running?
I did my best Easter sermon ever. Was the year before I came here, and I may have repeated it once here, parts of it. It's called Peter Goes Running. And I think it's amazing because, again, they say, the women say all the things they've just learned to the apostles. That's verse 10, right? And you can imagine, like, the part of the way they told him was, and we saw these two angels, and the angels told us that Jesus said this was going to happen, and it did.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that wasn't part of the story.
Right.
And in verse 11, but these words seem to them, and the them there is the apostles, right? An idle tale, right? And they did not believe them.
Yeah.
And you can almost see it if you close your eyes. Like, ladies, what more do you want us to suffer this weekend?
Yeah.
Like, we've already lost everything. He's gone.
Right. And these now, women probably were grieving more than anybody.
Exactly,
I bet they're
right.
Like, you guys are, y'all are in your grief mode.
Right. This crazy. You saw it.
So crazy.
You made it up.
Right.
You're blinded by grief.
Yeah.
You know? You're hysterical.
We love it. We love it when men
say that. Say that, don't you?
It's pretty much our favorite.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of women really like that when people, when dudes say that, right? And for some reason, verse 12, Peter gets it right.
Yeah.
And if you read John's gospel, he gets most of this wrong.
Yeah.
But here in Luke, he gets it right. Peter jumps up and he goes running.
Yeah.
He's got to be the first person there. And he sees the cloths. And he goes by himself home, like, right?
Yeah.
He's crossed by himself, excuse me. And then he goes back home, amazed at what had happened.
Yeah. Right. So then there are these linen cloths by themselves.
Yeah.
What are those doing there? Why is Jesus taking off some of the linen cloths?
Presumably he just got up out of his clothes and walked out.
Yeah.
You know, and there's whole relics and things about that, like the Shroud of Turin. That's one of the sort of disputed artifacts here in the world.
Ooh,
one of the relics that comes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in, I think it's in Rome now, but it was supposedly in Turin, Italy. You know, I don't know what to make of that. It's kind of supernatural. I don't really think about clothes all that much.
I think burial linens, but no body.
You know, and of course, right, throughout history, you're going to get people that say, well, of course someone stole his body. But these women, the disciples, and several other pockets of people were utterly convicted to the point that they laid their own lives down for it. Like most of those original apostles, those original church members, they paid the price of their lives to give us this story.
Yeah.
You know, and so whatever happened was powerful.
Yeah.
I don't know many people that will intentionally die for a lie.
Right.
And so whatever happened is incredibly, incredibly powerful and moving. And made an impact on these people that they never forgot.
Yeah.
This Easter we'll be preaching this, and I actually will preach from Acts 10. Mm. And what's interesting is that by the time you get to Acts 10, it's Peter's sermon about Easter Sunday. And he says in there, we are witnesses.
Mm.
We are witnesses to this thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that plural we, with the women and eventually the apostles, like eventually they all get on board.
Yeah.
They're not going to think it's an idle tale for long.
Yeah. Right.
The amazement of Peter turns into this, we're going to witness to this and give our lives for it, or be willing to give our lives for it.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Well, it is. I mean, I think we've all had a smaller, similar experience, like seeing something that was so amazing or so beautiful. You realized, I can't really be the same after this.
Yeah.
I've got to
I'm transformed.
Right. I've got to adjust something in me because of this new knowledge or this new thing I've experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one thing about the linens, in verse 12, Peter got up, ran to the tomb, stopping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves. And so it almost makes it seem like maybe there was a pile of these linens, like almost like Jesus doesn't have a need for these burial linens anymore.
No.
That they were in a, like, almost you could imagine them like folded up and piled over to the side.
Right.
I don't need these anymore.
Like, get these old rags off of me.
Yeah.
In John 11, when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, he actually says, Lazarus, like, get out and unbind yourself.
Yeah.
That Lazarus has to sort of take them off, mm-hmm. or whatever Lazarus was bound up in. But here, they're just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need this old stuff anymore. I'm not going to be constrained
yeah.
by the limits of the physical world anymore. And it's
yeah.
I love that. It's almost like a declaration of
yeah.
this newness of life that he's going to have and he's going to bring.
Yeah. Well, friends,
I think that's Easter.
Easter.
Happy
yeah.
Easter. I feel really good about that.
Me too. Me too.
We sincerely hope you've enjoyed this podcast today and really this entire podcast series. We hope to see you on Easter Sunday
yeah.
at White Memorial. Or if you don't come to White Memorial, I do hope and pray that you'll give time specifically over the Easter weekend just to throw yourselves at the feet of God in a spiritual sense and just sing the hymns loudly,
mm-hmm.
pray the prayers honestly, go to worship and just be caught up in at least one beautiful phrase or beautiful idea that you find from a hymn or, you know, God forbid, even the sermon, wherever you're at.
Yeah.
But it's a time where you and we as people of faith really should really be completely invested in thanksgiving for what God is doing in this sort of beautiful Easter story. Why are
yeah.
you looking for the living among the dead?
Mm-hmm.
He's not here.
He's risen. Yeah.
That's our story, and I think we should probably stick to it.
Sounds good. Well, happy Easter, everybody.